Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Roundtable.
You're listening to Roundtable with myself, He Young. I'm joined by Xingyu in the studio and Josh Cotterell on the line. Coming up, in today's world, there's a growing hunger for something deeper than mere material possessions. It's the craving for emotional nourishment, a longing to feel truly seen, heard, and understood. In China, the term emotional value is sparking conversations. Are we in our relationships, careers, and purchases all seeking this emotional essence? And when should we stop when we're asking for too much? And join us for World Parkinson's Day, a day of solidarity and action. Together, we'll raise awareness, support research, and celebrate the resilience of those living with Parkinson's and be part of the movement on Parkinson's Day. If you have a question that you'd like us to answer on a future show, whether it be about something that happened in the news or something you've been wondering about, you can email us a voice memo to ezfmroundtable@foxmail.com. And you can always find us on Apple Podcasts at Roundtable China. Now, as we continue today's discussion. Nowadays, there's a growing desire among young people to have their emotions nurtured and validated. In relationships, individuals seek emotional support from their partners. At work, they seek understanding and empathy from their employers. And during difficult times, they seek solace and comfort through various forms of consumption. And it's all in the name of seeking emotional value. The increasing focus on emotional well-being and the incremental normalization of discussing personal emotions in public discourse are positive signs of societal and social progress. However, as Grandma says, everything should be done in moderation. When the focus on emotions shifts towards seeking validation and emotional support from others, it can become risky. So let's talk about this term, buzzword, as such, emotional value or 情绪价值.
Well, emotional value is originally a marketing concept that measures customers' perceived emotional benefits like joy and happiness from the services or products offered by a business. But now it's more often used to describe interpersonal relationships, specifically a person's ability to influence the emotions of others. So the more comfortable, pleasant, and stable emotions a person brings to others, the higher their emotional value is. And conversely, if the emotions they evoke are less positive, then their emotional value is seen as lower. And apparently, emotional value matters significantly in our lives, and it plays an important role in fostering meaningful connections, personal well-being, and overall satisfaction.
Yes. Josh, is this term familiar with you, and what's your understanding of what this is about?
Yeah, well, it's kind of familiar to me. I understand that demanding emotional value from others can be quite a negative or positive thing. I see it as sort of seeking, on some level, on a positive way, it can be about connection and, you know, having a meaningful connection with somebody, which can be good. But I think that, you know, on the other hand, demanding it or having an excessive demand for this can also be quite a negative thing. It can lead to disappointment and isolation even, especially if you're putting your happiness in the hands of other people. So I think it's quite an interesting concept and quite a complex one, but I think that I understand it. And I've seen the translation. I know that we discuss translations sometimes here. And I think that some of the translations can vary a little bit, but I think this one's a good one, actually. Emotional value, emotional worth, something like this. Mm.
So when you're talking to your friends, let's say back in Scarborough, when you throw out the term emotional value, do you think they know what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a buzzword. It's not something that we throw around so much. I don't think that it's become popularized so far yet, but it's certainly something that would be understood.
Okay. Well, I have to say, I was a little surprised that originally this came from the marketing concept, because when I first heard it as a buzzword on Chinese social media and also just in everyday conversation was that, well, you know, I'm a girl and I talk to ladies, right? And then my girlfriends were saying, oh, you know, I'm not getting any of the emotional value from my, from the relationship with my boyfriend. And I feel like I'm giving so much, but I'm not having my needs met and feeling really bummed out by it. So, Xingyu, you know, it works in marketing, it works in personal relationships, and even at work. Wow, how does that pan out?
Right. So I think it has become a buzzword because nowadays, these young folks, they're not just merely focusing on material satisfaction. They are looking for something deeper in their emotions. And this is important because when your emotions are cared for, you feel a higher level of fulfillment and happiness, I guess. But for relationships, there are scenarios where a partner is always seeking validation or reassurance from the other partner. Whether it's joy or sorrow or frustration, they expect their partner to attend to them whenever these emotions arise. So when this happens, problems can arise because these continuous demand for attention can be quite emotionally draining for the other partner. And they sometimes feel pressured to support for the partner. So I think when we talk about emotional value, on one hand, we are the one to offer emotional value to our partner. But for those who just seek or demand emotional value from others and not thinking about giving it back, then it can be quite a problematic thing. And also at work, there are scenarios where working individuals, they expect their employers to appreciate their work, to understand their hardships, and they expect their colleagues to accommodate them. So that's why we are seeing some of the so-called big babies at work. They're not acting as adults. Like Netflix, the company has a key hiring principle that is to hire fully formed adults. They don't want people who are not emotionally stable and who are having problems with chronic complaining or just blaming others on their own mistakes. So when they expect their emotions to be catered to, this can be quite unrealistic and it can cause some negative effects on their career as well.
Mm-hmm. Josh, how do you feel about all those things? Is it in a way asking people to almost like leave your emotions at the door before entering your office? And I wonder how realistic is that? And also, people are not robots. You might be hired as quote unquote a fully formed human being with emotional stability, which we will get into in a second. Mm-hmm. But superiors who enjoy the C-suite in that company, you might have not been through hell as some of your employees have, nor have you battled the demons that other people have. And it's kind of easy for you to say, oh yeah, I demand stability in emotions or all that stuff from your employees. Do you think that's being understanding? Or maybe this is just corporate culture and you either live with it or there's the door and you're free to leave. I really don't get this. Tell me.
Well, I'm not sure if I completely get it as well, but I think that it is important to some degree to leave, you know, work at work when you go in there. And I think that we could all do well with protecting ourselves to some degree and detaching ourselves, hopefully in a healthy way, from some of the emotional drama and just the emotional tax that one inevitably gets from being at work, especially when it comes to personal relationships and things like that. I do think that on a management level, probably you have some responsibility to have a higher, decent emotional intelligence. And I know that probably most people who've had a manager in their life who doesn't have particularly good emotional intelligence and doesn't really consider the importance of interacting well and empathizing with your employees can be a really rough time, right? So I think that maybe on a management level, that's where the responsibility lies. For people who aren't on the management level, you know, who are just going to work, we have to engage with each other on an emotional level to get along because we're humans. Otherwise, we would just be robots, you know? So I think that there has to be some degree, but there's got to be boundaries set. And I don't know what those boundaries exactly should be because I think it depends on the workplace and the environment you're in, you know? Are you in a creative setting where you have to communicate emotionally, regularly with your team? Maybe you have a job where that's not exactly the case. I know that in our line of work, there's, for you two as well, there's quite a lot of that, right? You do need to interact with people all the time.
Yeah. Sometimes I like to push things to the extreme. And that's, you know, how you get some good answers from people. But certainly I agree with the workplace. I think most people understand that this is not your home. Right. You have to be professional. Otherwise, you're going to be penalized by it more often than not. And therefore, you know, there's game face. I mean, work face. And there are, you know, certain rules that we abide just so that you can function well at work. But also, I understand it's tricky, and I believe we have answered in one of our heart-to-heart segment questions about, you know, just trying to find a balance between emotional investment into work, because we're not robots, and we really need to, well, for some of us, we really need to care and really need to sort of invest almost like personally into making this product supreme, making your work performance sublime in however, whatever line of work you are. But also it's important to not let it encroach onto you as a person in a whole, because that's also potentially very detrimental to one's mental health. I think if you rely on one source of validation, be it work, be it your partner, be it your family or whatnot, it could all be a bit risky, because, well, today's show might have, you know, the financial bell ringing throughout. Well, don't put your eggs in one basket. And I think for our validation and emotional value, I think that is true as well.
Yeah. And also, I've seen some experts who say that actually emotional value is something that you give to yourself. Oh. So it's better not to ask or demand emotional value from others, because when you have these expectations from others, there's going to be disappointment. Or like in the workplace, if you want to get appreciation or higher fulfillment from your colleagues or employers, sometimes it can be
you're not getting it.
Yeah, you're not getting it, and you're disappointed, and you think your job is meaningless, and that's not good.
So, well, maybe it is. It's just we need to find meaning elsewhere and find deeper meaning in other things. I mean, people will have a different perspective on this.
So I've seen a more extreme case where some people, they fall victim to scammers who prey on these individuals who are seeking emotional fulfillment and validation. So a recent case is a young man who was engaged in online dating, and he was scammed out of 80,000 yuan. Mm-hmm. And instead of feeling upset, he was quite happy in a way. And he said he has never been treated so seriously by someone else. So when it comes to emotional value in some unhealthy situations, this can be quite problematic, because you are more likely to trust someone that you haven't seen or met before, but you want that emotional validation or reassurance from the other partner, and you are willing to probably pay some money to the partner, or and you don't feel that's a problem, and that can be quite
dangerous.
And
you think it's okay, this reminds me of something I didn't get to share on the show on this Tuesday. Okay, so we were talking about elderly folks sometimes falling for internet scams and being addicted to the internet as such. And there was one example about, well, if you live in China, you probably have heard of something similar before. That is some of these sales representatives who sell health supplements, all kinds of pills or quote unquote healthy beverages or whatnot, target older folks, especially those who are living alone, and they would actually come to your apartment and visit you.
All right.
Right. And then talk to you for like an hour, and then, you know, ultimately they want to sell you the product. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the product is completely useless. Most of the time, I think young people think it's completely useless, but older folks pay up anyway. Mm-hmm. And some are repeated customers. And I wonder, because I saw some of the personal anecdotes, not all older folks are falling this because of fraud. Some of them simply just want someone to talk to and somebody who actually listens to you attentively and is so nice to you. And then in a way, sure, they're buying all these health products that they probably will never use, but they're essentially paying for the time of that person. You actually kind of enjoy their companion and you want them to keep you company. So there's that. And also, I know that for some of the very expensive shops out there, how do they attract customers when a handbag is sold at maybe 50,000 yuan? It's when they start greeting you from the door, rolling out the red carpet and offer you champagne. And it's this whole set of services that make you feel special, pampered, treasured, which you don't get elsewhere. And then people pay for these extra value added on things. And it could be essentially we're chasing the thrill of the so-called emotional value. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Because of course, I mean, if you're bankrupt because of that, or if you become the prey of a crime, then that's certainly bad and the police should be involved. But otherwise, I think this is reverberating towards something very natural and deep in our hearts. Oh, Josh, what do you make of it?
Am I evoking emotions in you?
So strong. I don't know how to live the day. So, yeah, what'd you make of it?
Well, I think that when we talk about consumer behavior and businesses acknowledging the power of emotional value, this has been an important factor since the dawn of mainstream advertising, I think. And there's a lot of research to support this idea that things like heartwarming scenes of families and things like this, nostalgia is an incredibly powerful tool when it comes to advertising. And then, you know, you talk about building that emotional connection in person in a store. Businesses are starting to have to do this, especially in-store brick and mortar stores, right? Because e-commerce is becoming so dominant. I found one piece of research actually from the University of Pennsylvania who conducted a study to investigate the impact of emotional marketing on consumer behavior. And unsurprisingly, the study found that advertisements that evoke strong emotional responses, such as joy, nostalgia, again, friendship, care, and things like this were much more likely to result in increased brand loyalty. Now, that's a very important point here is brand loyalty, customer loyalty, which of course results in repeated spending. You know, you'll want to go back. It's like if you meet someone in a store and they treat you really well and you get on well with the shop assistant or the owner of the store, you're probably going to go back, right? I'm like this with my hairdresser. Going to get a haircut for me, I find quite difficult in China because I don't speak great Chinese and my hair is quite different to the average Chinese guy's hair, right? I have a very British haircut that is probably receding, even though I'm in denial about it. And I always come out just looking kind of weird in my mind, right? So when I find a hairdresser that I can communicate with and, you know, they don't mind me bumbling through my broken Chinese and they are empathetic with me, I go back. I go back for about a year until I move apartments. I have so much loyalty to them and it's because of that connection.
Yeah. So I think that's one of the business tactics for some of the business operators to cater to the inner cravings for emotions and connections out of these consumers. Actually, a recent survey in China shows that almost half of these young people, they attribute their consumption motives to gaining the emotional value out of their purchased commodities or services. But when it comes to online fraud or scams, probably we should really be cautious and vigilant about gaining so-called emotional value out of the other party.
Yes. Yeah. And also kind of corresponding to emotional value arises a term, emotional stability, 情绪稳定.
Yeah.
And of course, I suppose, well, you mentioned that live streaming
platform, but I suppose all corporate enterprises, they want employees who have emotional stability. Yeah. How do you interpret this term and also phenomenon? And is this mainly applied in the workplace or?
Yeah, not just workplace, but also in
relationships.
Yeah, relationships where you expect your partner to be emotionally stable, to be not so moody, not easily provoked. So that's a term that's been around, I think, in China for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I think some people, they place a great emphasis on achieving emotional stability, and they expect their partners or employees to have the same quality. But at its core, I think the meaning of emotional stability is about the extent to which we tend to experience negative emotions. So that's about how constant our mood tends to be. For those who score high on emotional stability, they are more likely to be calm, composed, and stress resistant, and they're not easily provoked. But on the other hand, for those who score lower on emotional stability, they can be quite moody, and stress and pressure can get the better of them. But when it comes to emotional stability, some say it's a false premise, because we as human beings, we are faced with emotions which are dynamic and complex. We cannot have a constant stability in emotions. So some say it's not realistic for anybody to be emotionally stable all the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the controversy.
Yeah, I guess so. So emotional stability is essentially the ability to control and regulate one's emotions. Mm. And I agree with you. Who can do that perfectly all the time? I mean, if a person can do that pretty well most of the time, already you're the champion. And I think in the workplace, a lot of us, we try to be like that.
Yeah.
And also in a relationship, I understand if there are like way too many mood swings, then it might be difficult to cope. But there are plenty of people who are like that. And there are plenty of people who, you know, work so hard to regulate their emotions at work, and then they take the emotional baggage to home, which is a no-no. And seriously, do not advise on that. Josh, how can we better cope with the ebb and flow of emotions?
That's a great question. And I think that there are some things that we can do on an individual level that can just make us happier. And I think generally when most people feel happier and more content, emotions, positive, more stable emotions tend to follow. So I think on a broader scale, it is important to practice mindfulness. And this doesn't necessarily mean that you have to start meditating or even go to therapy, although I think those two things are excellent and should be less stigmatized, especially the latter. I think that just being conscious of those things in your everyday life that contribute to your overall mental well-being. And if you can identify those things, they're different for everybody. And some of the things are similar as well. Things like your diet, getting enough sleep, etc. All the boring stuff is usually the most important stuff, getting enough exercise, etc. I think all of these things are vital. You need that base.
Thank you, Josh. Coming up, let's learn more about World Parkinson's Day right after this break.
Looking for passion? How about fiery debate? Want to hear about current events in China from different perspectives? Then tune in to Roundtable, where East meets West and understanding is the goal.
It's the hour of Roundtable with myself, He Yang. I'm joined by Xingyu in the studio and Josh Cotterell on the line. April the 11th marks World Parkinson's Day. Parkinson's disease is the second most common chronic progressive neurodegenerative disorder among the elderly after Alzheimer's disease. Although there is currently no cure for this disease, early intervention and diagnosis are important as patients can receive proper treatment to maintain their quality of life. Therefore, raising awareness to understand more about Parkinson's disease is crucial. On this day, let's learn more about it. Xingyu, please give us the skinny on the primary symptoms of Parkinson's disease.
Yeah, so Parkinson's disease is a progressive brain disorder that can cause problems with your movements, such as shaking, stiffness, and difficulty with your balance and coordination. And some of these non-movement-related symptoms can include cognitive impairment, loss of sense of smell, you have trouble thinking, focusing, and also sleep disorders. So these symptoms usually begin gradually and can worsen over time.
Thank you. And what causes Parkinson's disease?
So there are several factors, actually, and not all of them are so understood, which is why it's so important to have these days. Genetic factors are important. While most cases are sporadic, which means that they're random, a small percentage of cases are believed to be hereditary, certain mutations. There are also environmental factors. Things like toxins and pollutants may play a role, and lifestyle factors as well. So things like research has shown that smoking and things like this can actually have a protective effect against it, although reasons are not fully understood. And there's also neurodegenerative processes as well. So there's a lot of factors actually, which show, again, why it's so important to understand it.
Parkinson's disease is caused possibly by decreased dopamine production in the brain, and the absence of dopamine makes it hard for the brain to coordinate muscle movements. And experts don't know what triggers Parkinson's disease most of the time, so that's why this is still an area that needs a lot more research for sure. And Parkinson's disease can be hard to diagnose, and no single test can identify it. Xingyu has identified for us a whole bunch of motor and non-motor symptoms, so it's very important for everybody just to pay attention to your health and your body movement and all these things. And how many people are affected by this disease? Let's take a look at China first.
In China, it's estimated that there are at least 3 million people who are affected by Parkinson's disease, and this number of patients will be increasing to 5 million by 2030. And globally, according to the World Health Organization, the prevalence of Parkinson's disease has doubled in the past 25 years. And in 2019, the estimates show that over 8.5 million individuals have this disease.
And that brings us to the end of today's roundtable. Thank you so much, Xingyu, for joining this discussion from the studio, and Josh speaking with us online. I'm He Yang. We'll see you next time.